The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network. I'm not afraid, to take a stand.
So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. I trust and hope that you are doing well. Had a good weekend, I hope, and got yourself some relaxation as much as you could and ready for the week. If you want to give us a call at all today, the numbers to do so are 323-6232. That's 323-6232. Or you can call us on 325-4316, 325-4316, or 325-4259, that's 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796, that's 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043, that's 439-3043. We are, of course, live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to catch us on BTC Float channel 612. That's BTC Float channel 612. The campaign is going on, and it's heating up. Events are all around. But before I really get into some of that, I do want to say a word about our posture in the midst of this COVID-19 pandemic. I mean, we are now at 430 people dead from COVID in the Bahamas. And most of that has occurred only in recent months, most of it. There was a time when we were at 90 or 100 and were there for quite some time. We are four times that number. Four times that number. 27 people having died only over the last few days. And some of those people include healthcare professionals. Healthcare professionals. Leaving behind spouses and children. And the pandemic rages, COVID-19 at home. Rages. We are acting in ways like it's no big deal. Like we got this under wraps. Like we can deal with this. No changes to come. No adjustments to be made. Now, I am going to say something that may not make some political operatives happy. I'm going to say it anyways. It is my earnest belief
that if this election were behind us, that if we were in, if we were some safe distance from an election, that the authorities in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, the political authorities, would not have the same policy toward COVID-19 as it does today. Let me say that again. It is my fervent belief that if what was happening in the Bahamas now was happening in the Bahamas when we were far removed from an election, or we were following an election, that the policy toward managing COVID-19 would be different. How different? I have no doubt that following the next election, well, let me not say I have no doubt. I do not have a lot of doubt that following the next election, any administration faced with the current COVID-19 realities will, in fact, take more significant measures to curb the spread of COVID. And it would not be simply admonishing people to get vaccinated. There would be a curtailing, I have no doubt, of the level of social activity in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. And I would not disagree with them, because it would be the responsible thing to do. It was the thing we did when our death toll was far lower than it is now, when the severity of our circumstances in terms of infection seemed significantly less. We took very strong measures to try and fight back the pandemic. But the present season we are in, I believe, is compromising policy making toward COVID-19. With the greatest respect to my friend and to the minister responsible for health, it would be a bit, to me, I want to be generous. It would be a bit to me, odd to believe that as you are faced with a surge in COVID-19, as you are retaining emergency powers to curb COVID-19, as you have in place help to curb COVID-19, inclusive of curfews, etc., as you are trying to admonish people not to have gatherings at funerals and weddings and parties and social private gatherings and the like, as all of that is happening, it would be odd to suggest that the level of political activity which we are able to observe with our own eyes does not pose an added risk to the spread of COVID-19. It would be odd to suggest that. And then on top of that, that what then helps you to have comfort is that the vaccination taking place, the vaccination taking to mitigate that. Oh, I'm so sorry. I don't buy that. And frankly, brother, sisters, I know where you are. We have been there. Some of us have been there. We know the press of trying to balance the politics, the public policy, and the public interest. But you don't have folks on the Progressive Liberal Party side, on the PLP side, as far as I can see, you have control over the machinery and the Free National Movement has to acknowledge that, and in many ways it is demonstrating some of this machine over the machinery to curb the the potential spread of COVID through your political activities, and that's the reality. So what do you do in the face of that? Okay, so you're not going to take any stronger measures now because it's not politic to do so. At least demonstrate by your own conduct in your political machinery a willingness to do everything in your power to ease the risk to the public health facilities, to ease the risk to the public health facility professionals, to ease the risk to the country. At least do that. And don't believe that there are lots of people beyond your ardent supporters who are going to not observe and think something is wrong. Very wrong. When life, remember Prime Minister earnestly in his speeches said, we are trying to save lives. And I believe them. Are we not still trying to save lives? I don't care if you're PLP, FNM, DNA, coalition, whatever you are. To act with reckless abandon now is to demonstrate an unseriousness toward the very thing you are campaigning to be, which is the government of the Bahamas. At this hour, to not hear those health professionals and to not an undying commitment to doing everything necessary to support them and to avoid the challenges that they are having to face every day is to show an unseriousness about the very thing that we are seeking to get through a campaign, which is a victory to be the government. All right, we have to come on, man. I mean, honestly, I don't expect it, but hey. You state what you believe to be true anyhow. And I'm going to warn some of you right now. I'm going to warn you that I'm watching and observing. And I see a sufficiency of indifference, a sufficiency of unwillingness to do what is fundamentally required, I will call you out. I will call you out, and if it's bad enough, I will oppose you. I want you to know that, and I'm dead serious about that. Because if the people who we want in office must show a seriousness toward the most fundamental thing in a state and society, which is life. I once heard Reverend George Cumberbatch, the late, speaking a sermon at First Baptist Church in Freeport Grand Bahama. If you err on the side of life. I was greatly moved by it. If you err on the side of life. And he said it after a couple of men died at the container port during a freak storm of a sort. He was talking about how, you know, sometimes you have to ignore profits, you have to ignore power, you have to ignore popularity, you have to ignore so many things that arouse our egoic interest so that you could put life ahead of those things and preserve and protect life. Texas, please ask the nation to pray for our police officers. We lost 5 officers recently due to COVID, yes. So Mr. Lang, are you saying that politics at this time is causing a lot of babies to die? I'm not saying that. If I wanted to say that, I know how to form words into sentences and sentences into paragraphs. If I wanted to say that politics is causing people to die, I would have said that. What I am saying is that politics, the way the politics is being done by some, adds risk to the possibility of spread. That is what I'm saying. And I am saying that spread could lead to more deaths. Okay, you don't need to put words in my mouth. I am quite capable of stringing words together. Thank God for education and the like. I really am thankful. So I was not saying any such thing. We have to be careful what is going on. Steck says, thank you for that statement, Shibabu. There is a serious disconnect between the public message to contain the spread of COVID and the current practices going on around the election campaign. I agree. Steck says, great show as usual, Mr. Lang. My opinion is it's a bad, actually, a horrible time to hold an election. PM should not, in my opinion, cave into the brave Davis, keep on coaxing him to ring the bell. I don't think coaxing him had anything to do with that. I think he called this election because he thinks it's the best opportunity for him to win. I think that's it. And I'm not even getting on the, you shouldn't have called the election bandwagon at all anymore, because that's done. What I'm saying is the situation we are now in, the political parties have to, and operatives, have to exercise a level of caution that says, we understand what we're fighting for, which is to represent and govern the people of the country. And if that means that they then matter the most, we should do the things that show in this pandemic that we care about their very lives, their very health, their very well-being. So on another note, I think Papa giving his support to Dr. Sands is platinum support. We can talk to Papa in a minute. We'll talk about Mr. Ingram in a minute. So you playing the devil's advocate, laugh out loud. You know your colleagues are not listening to you, man. Laugh out loud. They are in a fight for the pot. All kind of meat in that pot. Devil's advocate, because the devil's advocate is a game. And I'm not playing any games. Okay? I'm not playing any games. And they may not be listening to me, but they're not the only ones I'm talking to. I'm not only talking to Dr. Minnis and his team. I'm talking to Mr. Davis and his team. I'm talking to this Kamala Faye and her team and everybody else. It is only in sometimes your narrow, biased minds that you think that people are only talking to one set of people. Everybody's campaigning. Everybody's campaigning. Okay. Steck says, good afternoon. How are you? I validate all you have said. God bless. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. So, Mr. Ingram, who has been modifying the quiet. And I say modifiedly because they say, and those things have not been any direct affront to anybody, but can imply some points of view that he has. But he has not been on the front lines at all, advocating for anybody. Now, it has to be recognized that whatever the Ingram's political participation in the country has been, he has had no more distinguished and higher participation than his leadership of the Free National Movement. None. And he's been the leader of it, and through that leadership, he has been able to serve as Prime Minister of the Bahamas for 15 and consecutive years. I want to say some more about that and what he did of late when we come back. You're listening to Z-Live. I'm Shabab Alang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
Summer is heating up, and Burger King Nassau is bringing the flavor. Introducing our all-new take on a classic chicken sandwich, the Barbecue Swiss Crispy King. Our new sandwich is full of smoky and tangy flavor and features our crispy chicken patty with tangy chipotle sauce, onion rings, bacon, Swiss cheese, lettuce, and tomato, plus a smoky barbecue sauce on a soft potato bun. The new Barbecue Swiss Crispy King chicken sandwich with fries and a Pepsi is a summer treat you will love to eat, but only available for a limited time, and only at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Have you taken a look at those yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
Growing up over the hill, Dr. Minnis learned the importance of education. That's why the FNM is delivering on its commitment to expand education access, improve academic opportunities, and push to make the University of the Bahamas tuition-free. And it's why the FNM is repairing and building schools in every corner of the Bahamas, paving the way to a brighter future. The FNM is making a difference for the next generation of Bahamians. September 16th, vote FNM, because it's about your future.
This has been a paid political announcement from the Free National Movement.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabab Olang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. If you want to call, please give us a call at 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can text us on 422-WATME on 439-3043. I believe we have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Good afternoon, Chicago.
Hey, good afternoon. How you doing?
Yeah, boy, I haven't called to talk to you since Lady Finland admitted office like some time ago, whenever that was.
Oh, well, thank you for calling the show.
Perfect. Okay, yeah. What I want to say is I don't know if former Prime Minister Ingram's endorsement of Dwayne Stein is going to have that much of a weight. Because when he lost the election in 2012, he handpicked the candidate, backed him up, campaigned for him, and he still lost. The point that he still lost. So I don't know.
But do you know the general term that says that politicians in retirement tend to be more popular or favored than when they were in office? You know that sentiment?
Well, he was in retirement then. That's what I'm saying. He gave a little while after, then he had my election.
Yeah, but in 2012, you got to forgive me, my friend. Me and him lost office together. So if you tell me he was pumping him up in 2012. That was shortly after 2012. It was around 2012. He wasn't retired too long.
But the fact of the matter is, the last time you endorsed someone, they lost.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that just because you endorse somebody one time and they lost doesn't mean that the same thing will happen the next time. Times are different. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
I hope that he wins, but we got to see.
I understand. All I'm saying is a tendency for people to be more favored the further they are removed from office than before. And I know that to be, I know that to be a fact. And see, let me also explain this to you.
Because did Mr. Ingram not lose and come back and win again?
Yeah.
Okay, losing ain't the whole story.
Well, Christie lost and he came back and win again.
But that's what I'm saying.
One more thing, Chiwago.
Sure.
What is the problem with voting during this COVID season? Because we still go to school one way or the other. We still shop one way or the other. We still do everything in our lives. Marry people, get married, and everything in our lives. What's wrong with orderly distancing ourselves? Take for 2 minutes and just mark our X and come back out. What's so dangerous about that?
Well, did you hear somebody say there's a problem with voting now?
I just heard the Prime Minister, former Prime Minister Ingram, said it's a bad time to speak to it all up like that. You know, like, what's the big problem?
No, was he talking about campaigning, or was he talking about voting?
Voting and campaigning. This is the time to vote and the campaign.
Yeah, but I...
But even the campaign, they're doing that as safe as possible. You stand, if two family members in the car, they sit in the car, or stand outside on the side of the car and listen to the rally and watch the thing on a big screen.
I didn't see what's so dangerous about that. Because can you let me talk for 1 minute?
Yeah, go ahead, Mom. What's
wrong with it is that apparently you didn't see people who were at the rallies with the cars mixing and mingling. Apparently you didn't see that.
I was to the rally.
Well, I watched the rally.
I was to the rally.
I saw some, yeah, but I saw, all right. So I'm sorry. I can only tell you what I saw in my own eyes. I didn't say everybody was doing it, but I think the problem is, and it's not just Mr. Ingram, you want to put this on Mr. Ingram, but are health professionals not expressing concerns about what they're seeing? All right. And again, unfortunately, you know, we are caught in a tribal environment where whatever accords with your particular tribe's benefit, it's okay. If it works against your tribe, then it's not okay. And if that's the way we want to govern ourselves, then no problem. Just stop blaming the people who in their tribe say, don't get vaccine. And the people who in their tribe say, get vaccinated. And the people who in their tribe say, mind the hell with mask. And the people who in their tribe say, yeah, wear the mask. Let's just do the tribe thing and move on. No problem. If you're going to sit down and tell me we didn't see what we see, people aren't observing what they're observing, and only it's only a matter of Mr. Ingram. Why Mr. Ingram is the target of your suggestions when other people make the same observation? I'm not Mr. Ingram. I make the observation too, that this is not a good time to be holding an election. I mean, you have to be absolutely naive to believe that. But I do agree with you that, because I said it. I said, why we talk about having elections now, which I think is a bad idea. It's also a bad idea to have your economy so operating on full cylinders as it is. But look at what we've done. We've said to schools that are likely to be more organized and orderly than any campaign you could put together, you can't open come September. You have to go virtual. We said, virtual. But from your point of view, because of your tribe, it's okay to have campaigning go on. That's okay. Keep the children from being in prison. But it's okay to go and campaign. All right. Yeah. My mother used to tell me all the time, boy, said, boy, if you like it, let it kill you. That's what my mom used to say. Old people used to see us as the only one used to say that. Anyways, so Mr. Ingram is a former leader of the Free National Movement who, with the Free National Movement, was prime minister on two occasions. On two separate occasions. One 10-year consecutively, and then one 5-year. You cannot expect that a man who does that will not maintain an endearment to his party. That would be unreasonable. I don't even think, knowing him as I know him, he would try to even present any such thing as to look so disloyal to that very party that had meant so much to his own service to the country and to him. So, Mr. Ingram at heart, to me, remains an FNM, an FNM supporter. Now, his relationship with the current leader of the Free National Movement, I don't think anyone observing it play out would think it was and is a cordial, really good one. And I think some of the things he has said reflects that in terms of the way the party or the leader has conducted governance, he has some objections to that. You can tell that. Okay, that doesn't mean he is opposed to the party or everybody in the party. It isn't even doesn't even mean he's opposed to the leader himself per se, but he can certainly have a view as to his leadership and to his governance. And so that he went out to support Dwayne Sands, his friend and physician, is whatsoever. I suspect he will do it for several others too. I suspect you will see him do so. But a broad-based endorsement of the Menace administration and the Menace campaign and so forth, I don't know that that'll happen. But party candidates that he is tied to and what have you, and adorning a FNM, some people say, oh, but he only put on a Dwayne Sands shirt. So what? It's a Dwayne Sands F and Elizabeth shirt. If he was opposed to the FNM, he wouldn't put the shirt on. So I think that his stance with Dr. Sands is quite understandable given their friendship and given their relationship and his confidence in Dr. Sands' potential. When Dr. Sands was considering running for office, and he told you all this on the show, he spoke to me. I gave him some guidance, I gave him some advice. I also told him that I believed he had great potential in politics. I really do. He's a thinker. Sometimes I think he is less politic than you need to be, because some things you need to keep to yourself for a time until you kind of develop it and test it out and so forth. But he's a thinker, and he has a great capacity for leadership. And like all of us, you know, there might be things about our personality people might not like, but he has great potential. And I think that Mr. Ingram sees that. And Mr. Ingram has always been someone who is attracted to people with leadership potential. And so that surprises me about that, that he embraced the opportunity to help his friend in what might be a tight race with him. And I think that is now. Will that help the FNM or hurt the FNM? I certainly don't think it can hurt the FNM. You know, how much it will help, who knows? But, you know, who knows? Who knows? We'll see. We have some text telling me. Says, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. I supported the FNM in the last election, but when the competent authority says that the pandemic is over for the vaccinated, it concerns me greatly. I agree with you, vaccinations are not the end and all for curbing the spread. If people believe that, please tell them, just take a look at what's happening in Israel, one of the highest vaccinated countries in the world. Great opening statement today. Thank you very much. I appreciate your thoughts. A good and balanced point, but by extension, if it's done after, why not while the crisis is on? I'm not sure what you mean by if it is done after, so I might have missed something. This text says, unless you're referring to my talk about taking the measures necessary to curb the pandemic. I'm not sure if you could help me. I'm happy to readdress it. This text says, Mr. Lang, could you play Mr. Ingram's song, man, please? Come on, let the day is not that day. Today is not that day. We got to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Z Live and Survival Line, your home.
If you feel like you've been down the same road,
Sheila, you okay? I see smoke coming from your window.
Chad, Joni Mo's burning down the house frying chicken.
Your kitchen is a mess. You have insurance?
If I have insurance, I pull my phone out, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and in no time, I was on live chat with RSA rep, sent pics of the damage, filed my claim on the spot.
Wow, I don't think my insurance got that kind of...
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Hospitals are collapsing. Doctors say our healthcare system is past the breaking point. Nurses disrespected. Not enough beds or resources. Now, this government failed to disclose who's really benefiting from millions in COVID contracts, hiding who profits from travel visas, from food assistance, from COVID testing fees. So while healthcare collapsed, who got rich? The FNM can't fix the crisis. They are the crisis.
This has been a paid political announcement by the PLP.
This is Guardian Radio, FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, everybody.
Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio. Beautiful Monday afternoon. If you want to call us, 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796 or WhatsApp me on 439-3043. A very astute listener said something that I want to read. He said the last time he, talking about Mr. Ingram, endorsed someone day one. That someone was Dr. Minnis. So if the caller who called before wants to talk about Mr. Ingram's endorsement power, why don't you talk about what happened in 2017? There are any number of people who believe that Mr. Ingram's participation helped to seal the deal. Some might even say turn the tide of favor. Okay, so that's a good point somebody makes. This text says, nice show, sir. Can you, in good wisdom, explain how Mr. Ingram, who showed up in Elizabeth Estate to support Dr. Sands, transfer in to vote for Dr. Sands at this stage in this election? Well, I can only tell you this much, and I'm not asking anybody. There are FNMs, some who are lacking in enthusiasm about voting, some who may be who may be on the sidelines about what to do. There are also others, not so much FNMs, who are on the sidelines. A figure like Mr. Ingram, highly regarded and respected by some people, many people, might just be a one vote, two vote, 10 votes, 100 votes difference for a candidate. And Elizabeth is a seat that has been won and lost by margins before. And so the last thing you want to do when you are in a campaign is leave any asset on the sideline if it can help. Any. You want to have made to win. And if you lose, say, okay, but at least I didn't leave anything on the table, because the last thing you want to do is spend 5, 10, 15 years thinking, well, you know, if I had only brought Mr. Ingram out, I can guarantee you that Al Gore probably says that any number of times when it comes to, should I have used Bill Clinton more? This text says, Mr. Lang, please explain how a university can be free to attend as promised in a political ad. What political ad? I'm not sure what that is referring to. at all. So if you can help me, then maybe I can help. This text says, Papa, how to run his cabinet government. Number one, now is not the time to have an election. Where is the crystal ball that says May 22nd, the COVID-19 situation will be eradicated or better than today? Dr. Minnis can lead his government how he chooses. He answers to voters, not Mr. Ingram. Well, yeah, but I mean, Mr. Ingram is a citizen, happens to be quite a distinguished citizen. He has a point of view. That's all he could do is just state his point of view. But who is trying to tell anybody how to run anything? I just don't understand how some of you come with this notion. You say things like, man, let the man govern, or you know, let them, like, who could stop it? Like, unless you fire a leader at an election time, who can stop them from doing anything? Does that mean you should shut your mouth and don't say anything? Well, if that's the case, then why, as opposition, did Mr. Dr. Minnis speak out the way he did? He couldn't stop the government from doing anything, but he spoke up because that's what you do. You're a citizen. You know, you can. You have a voice. Look at you. You are here texting us. Now, can you stop Mr. Ingram from saying what he says? No, but you're texting. Some of you, I let me tell you something. You have to understand some things about how the world works and life works. We are in a free society. That means that each of us can do as we wish. There are consequences to what we do, but we can do as we wish. So it's not a question of stopping anybody from doing anything. It's a question of, can I, as a free will human being in a free society, express myself, no matter who I am, Hubert Ingram, Sean Diggins, and I just say what I want to say? And you just let people say what they have to say, just as you, in your arrogance, or in your ability, just say what you want to say. As long as it's happening. And it's especially the case when you are calling or talking to a talk show host, or you are talking to the members of the press or anybody. All you can do is express your view. What else can you do other than go vote when it's time to vote? And you ain't gonna stop Mr. Ingram from talking, because he can talk when he wishes and people want to hear what he has to say. Or did he just upset you because you would have preferred him to go and say, elect my man Minnis? That would have been better. Or my man Brave Davis, that would have been better. Well, which would it be? Right? Come on, man. I suspect. And in some instances, when you don't hear from him, you hear a lot. Right? Because whatever you think of him, he remains a very influential voice in some circles and some quarters in the country. Right? So Dr. Sands got the benefit of that voice and presence in his constituency on the weekend, and I'm sure he's happy about that. Real happy about that. When we return from after the break, I want to talk a bit about the fiscal situation in the country, the quarterly fiscal strategy. You know, the Minnis administration, prior to the pandemic, had many economic measures, the indicators. So this isn't Shivago's opinion or Minnis's opinion or anybody's opinion. If you looked at the economic indicators, you would have seen that they were performing, okay, and were trending some of them were trending in a positive direction. Now, if you compare the last 2 years of the Christie administration, for instance, to the 2 years of the Minnis administration, the first 2 years, the years prior to COVID, right? What you will find in growth, in terms of economic growth, what you will find is that in the last 2 years of the Christie administration, the average growth was 1.5%. The Minnis administration, in their first 2 years as an administration, the average growth was 2.05%. Okay, that is a full 0.55 percentage point better growth. If you add 2019 to the growth, and you average out that growth, then what the Minnis administration would have seen was an average growth of 1.77%. That's the average growth. If you want to measure the last 3 years of the Christie administration and its growth, on average, that growth was average 3.3%, which was a 0.37% than the Minnis administration's first 3 years of growth, right? Now, if somebody asks, well, how does the first 3 years of the Christie administration's growth compare to the Minnis' first 3 years? Well, we could do that too. And that would have been 1.37%. Again, what was the Minnis administration's first 3 years of growth? That was 1.77%. Again, higher growth. So by growth metrics, the Minnis administration would have seen a better performance. It wasn't stellarly better, but it was a better performance prior to the pandemic. The debt to GDP ratio was also headed in a downward direction from 5% to down to 1.8%. So that was headed in the right direction. The tourism numbers would have fed into the growth numbers. So there are metrics that the Minnis administration could point to that would have said that the economy was performing better. But was it performing to the that one we would have needed to feel like a more prosperous country? No, not at all. But the unemployment rate was going down, et cetera. So when we come back against that backdrop, we're going to look a little bit better at this last quarterly statistical review. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Langos. We'll be back after this break.
This is Guardian Radio, 90 Smart Talk, quality.
just can't keep living this way. So starting today, I'm breaking out of this cage.
Ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shavar Golang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Dadian Radio 96.9. Monday afternoon. So glad that you could join us. If you want to give us a call at all today, the numbers to do so are 323-232. That's 323-6232, or you can call us on and call us on 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316 or 325-4259, 325-4259. Short, the latest fiscal snapshot. And from looking at the numbers, I mean, you know, you can't, you're not going to get a deep picture of the government's finances, but according to the snapshot, what it does appear is that the government is basically meeting its targets. The deficit, which is the big story, is around what the government projected it would be, which is about $1.3 billion or so. The revenue is up, and that's understandable because the economic activity in the country is up. Expenditure remains on pace with what the expectation was for expenditure, and heightened given the circumstances the government found itself in. And so not a whole lot there. But what is really of grave concern, and ought to be of grave concern, is what the current scenario means for us going forward. And clearly, having deficit levels of the order of $1 billion is a troubling scenario, because that's not free money. That is monies that have to be borrowed to cover the deficit. And that in doing that, staring at is greater debt servicing. I know that there is a big story. National debt hits $10 billion. But, I mean, what's magical about that? When it was $500 million, what's the difference? When it was $1 billion, hit $2 billion, what's the difference? When it was $2 billion, hit $6 billion, that's not really the story at all. The story is
against the backdrop of a growing national debt that has to be serviced. What is your economic growth prospects? What is your revenue generating capacity in order to service that debt? That's the whole story. The whole story is not debt hits $10 billion. All right, cut $1 billion and you hit $5 billion. That was five times the $1 billion. So $10 billion ain't a magical number. Many countries have gone past that. $100 billion ain't a magical number. It's what does that number mean in relation to your growth prospects and your ability to generate revenue to service your debt? And that remains the Bahamas' Achilles heel, that we do not have at the moment the level of economic growth prospects. And no party in this current election, no party has shown anything concrete that would say it can bring us to levels of economic growth that can erase, manage more comfortably the level of indebtedness that we have. They all have plans for economic growth, or should I say things to do that they believe will contribute to economic growth. But none of those things represents any concrete plans toward economic growth. And lots of the economic growth depends on private investments, both of the domestic and of the foreign kind. And so only that level of private investment and only that level of private place will bring the level of economic growth that will generate the kinds of activities that the government can tax and the activity the government can tax that can service more and more debt. And as it now stands, except the government of the Bahamas enters into enters into a commitment toward really serious fiscal restraint, the national debt is going to continue to grow. And in a couple of years, we'll be saying hits $11 billion. And a couple of years after that, we'll be saying hits $12 billion. In a couple of years, we'll be saying hits $13 billion. And so $10 billion would be a joke. And the only way we look at that and not panic will be to say that we are growing at a pace that is generating the kinds of economic activity that makes it possible for the government to generate revenue to be able to cover that. Now, I have to say that the government of the Bahamas under the Minister administration, starting with when Mr. Turnquest was Minister of Finance, has to be commended for moving the needle forward on providing more timely information about the affairs of the country's finances. So we are able to talk about these quarterly snapshots when we did not have them before. And that's commendable. That gives a better sense of where we are than what may have been the case when the last thing you saw may have been at budget time in June. Now, you know, it's still lagging, but it's still more current than we would have become accustomed to, and that's commendable. Hopefully, at some point, we'll move to a situation where you can go online and more regularly get updates on where critical metrics stand. And keep you informed because it's your money and you deserve to know what's going on with it. What those kinds of numbers mean and those kinds of presentation mean in the middle of an election, well, it only could mean are prepared to use them analytically and comparatively, right? Analytically to say, okay, am I happy with revenue performance? Am I happy with expenditure performance? Am I happy with deficit levels? Am I happy with the rate of growth of the debt? Am I happy with the growth rate of the economy? Am I happy with where, how, and how we're distributing or collecting revenue?
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabab Ulan, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. Sorry about that breakage, but sometimes these technology failures and there's nothing you can do. My apologies. Somebody sent me a text about a PLP ad that's out there with some excerpt from my from a previous show talking about Mr. Brave Davis and what have you. Someone asked if they need my permission to do so. I don't know what the rules are about these things at all. All I can say is this much, though. You remember now, you can't be fish and fowl. You cannot be fish and fowl. There are some folk who... Chicago line. I mean, what I found curious was the piece that was being sent around, the first one, not the one now that seems to be featuring a political ad. The piece that was being sent around, the fella started off saying, I don't agree with anything Chicago line says. Nothing. So the whole show, I talk about God, Jesus Christ, talk about the country being beautiful, talking about how I love the country. He don't agree with none of that. But I say something positive about Brad Davis, he agrees with it. He agrees with it. Sometimes, so I say something positive about Brad Davis. I've said positive things about Dr. Minnis too, but the FNM don't pick that up. That's on them. Anyways, you can't be fish and fowl. So if I ever have occasion to be critical of Mr. Davis, don't take it personally. Just as you don't take it personally, if I have an occasion to be critical of Dr. Minnis or say something positive about it. Because some of us have a view that you are only doing good when you agree with what I say or think. But when you don't agree with what I say or think, now you're a bad person, you're not good. So I only issued a warning. All right, I only issued a warning. Just a note. You can't be fish. And foul. So I was saying that the economic situation in the country is such that what is the real alarm and what is the real concern is that growth, meaning over time we have to generate jobs sufficient for the people unemployed to work. We have to, in generating those jobs, be able to produce the kinds of wages and income that can help people prosper in the cost of living. Thing we have in the country. In time, we have to be able to create jobs that are sustainable, meaning people can hold on to those jobs because the businesses that are generating them have revenues coming in for periods to come. And we have to generate those jobs across the country so that they're not concentrated in New Providence, concentrated in Grand Bahama, but they're occurring in other islands of the Bahamas so that the population can thrive in those islands as well. That we are generating a sufficient level of economic activity such that the government can tax that activity without causing the economy to retrench because of the government's extraction of revenue from that economy. Now, that is what I just described, a very tall order. Those of you who sit around sometimes and you think this is so easy, Ma'am, please. Personal circumstances, you can't, in your personal circumstances, you think about how easy it is to change your economic fortunes. It isn't. It is not. If it were easy, we would have a buggy load of people on Easy Street right now. It isn't easy in a free enterprise, competition-driven environment and property rights environment. It isn't easy to generate income like that. It is not easy. And if it ain't easy for you, it ain't easy for no government, because if it was easy for governments to do across the world, it would just simply be done. It's not easy. So this is the tall order. This is the tall challenge that confronts the nation. At the head of this effort is the government. It's the one that is trying to do things that can stimulate those investments, get the domestic entrepreneurs rolling and doing, get the foreign investor set up so he or she can do what they're doing, and as a consequence, generate those revenues, generate those profits that then mean job creation and more job creation, and then hopefully do it over time. That's the effort that is required. It's a tall effort. And if anyone comes out there and tells you it's easy, it's an easy effort, you tell them, Shivagulang said, you are not being truthful. You are not being honest. One of the most successful businessmen in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas that I know, extremely successful, said to me one time, he said, Shivago, do you know how difficult it is to make $10,000? I said, sir, I do. It is very difficult. Just because people have done it doesn't mean it's easy. Many, many, many people doing it, it's not easy. And so this is the tall order facing our country. It is the reason why continuing downgrades are a prospect. It is the reason why deteriorated government financial circumstances would continue. It is the reason why lots of people will continue to have economic and financial hardship. It is the reason why the country cannot grow at the pace. It's the reason why financial institutions will not lend out money in the way that we would like them to. It is the reason why our general sense of economic prosperity is waning. It is the reason why young people in the country feel some dismay or distress over being here, staying here. It's the reason why many of them, if they get an opportunity abroad after completing university, may stay abroad, because the economy of the Bahamas is the thing that feeds us. Not feeds only in terms of eating, but feeds our ambitions, feeds our aspirations, feeds our sense of better and well-being in so many ways. That's the tall order. And I do hear these parties. I hear them, I read them, I see them. That's the tall order. All these fancy ads and wonderful memes and all these things. That's the tall order. Very tall order. And just because you're a successful businessman, a successful lawyer, a successful doctor, does not mean that you can generate and produce that success in the economy. Because quite frankly, it doesn't depend upon the leadership of the country or government of the country alone. There are things beyond their control that matter. They can ensure that at the very least, their efforts are not hurting that growth, and at best might be encouraging it. They can do that. But that's the tall order. And if you're sitting out there listening and you are without a job, or you are with the job that you hoped would be better, or you're not making the level of income you need to make in order to live the lifestyle that you like to make, live, then you need that economy that I'm talking about. And that's a tall order. Now, someone said to me the other day, you know, Mr. Lyon, we need to learn how to feed ourselves. We need, we need to be able to feed ourselves and grow our own food. Listen to me. I want to stop you in your tracks right now. The Commonwealth of the Bahamas can't feed itself. What? The Commonwealth of the Bahamas can feed itself. What we cannot do is feed ourselves on the diet and appetite we now have. See, if filet mignon, right? Filet mignon, or Captain Crunch, or Rice Krispie, or apples, strawberries, and blueberries, and raspberries. If these kinds of things have to be in your diet, you can't feed yourself. And you would not be alone. America couldn't do it. Russia couldn't do it. Great Britain couldn't do it. That's why they import all these things. But if your diet were more dominated by fish and vegetables and the poultry and those kinds and dillies and mangoes and banana and them kind of thing, you could feed yourself. You could. And if your luxury diet was lobster and them kind of, you can feed yourself. But on the current westernized, mostly American appetite that we have in this country, no, we can't feed ourselves on them because we don't produce them kind of food. If your children got to have fruit savers and lifesavers and cheese doodle and Funyuns and all kinds, we can't feed ourselves. But the diet necessary to live and live nutritiously, oh, we can feed ourselves. We can feed ourselves. Even if we had to import the grits and the rice, some of these basic things, we can feed ourselves. But we can't do it on that current appetite. If on the current appetite that I have to have a home that's 2,500 square feet or 9,000 square foot of land is is what we require, we cannot live that lifestyle now. Not in New Providence for the most part, and probably not other places in the Bahamas. Most of us can't live that lifestyle. 2,500, 3,000 square foot of land, we can't live that lifestyle. We're too broke for that. We got too much debt for that lifestyle. We can't do it. We can't do it. We don't make enough income for that. But if we decided, you know what, a more modest home, like 12 foot, 1,500 square feet on a 3,000, 4,000 square feet, the land, or maybe forget the land, maybe I just go up 4 or 5 stories and I just live with my neighbors in a nice 12, 1500 square foot home that's fitting and lovely and cozy for me and my children. Maybe we can do that. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Chicago Line, your host. We're going to take our final break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussions. We'll be back after this break.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails. and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
Hospitals are collapsing. Doctors say our healthcare system is past the breaking point. Nurses disrespected. Not enough beds or resources. Now, this government failed to disclose who's really benefiting from millions in COVID contracts, hiding who profits from travel visas, from food assistance, from COVID testing fees. So while healthcare collapsed, who got rich? The FNM can't fix the crisis. They are the crisis.
This has been a paid political announcement by the PLP.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM for these remaining moments of the show. I have a text here that says, "Mother sick man, why you keep pulling me back from the deep end? Preach, brother. Say, I hate that you force me to see every aspect." Laugh out loud. Say, "I want ribeye and foie gras, homeboy. We need to grow that." As I said, if that's your appetite, we can't feed ourselves. Not some of them things. We just eating the Bahamas, you know. Our appetite is quite Western and quite American. This text says the growth was a direct link to Bahama, nothing else. It doesn't matter what the growth is. Let me tell you all something. Again, you can't be fish and fowl at the same time. First of all, any private investment, Bahamian or foreign, is the private investor, not the government. The government may approve it, the government may issue permits for it, but it's a private investor. But if you are presiding over an economy that gets that investment and it's growing, then you get to claim that as a part of your legacy. Just as you're not the one who fires people or let people go when you downgrade as a private investor, but when those unemployment figures come out, you blame the government. So you can't get the benefit of cussing the government when things go bad and then saying, well, the government didn't do it when things go good. That's just utter nonsense. All right? If you're presiding over an economy and it is growing, you are the one presiding over it. Now, you might decide not to credit the government with it. That's fine. In your analysis, you might say the government policy did not produce it. That's fine, too. But you don't get to be so convenient to say, oh, well, X, Y, and Z, and so forth. When Mr. Christie came in office, there was some third phases of Atlantis that he was able to preside over after the thing was initiated under Mr. Ingram. When Mr. Ingram came to office, there was some things that may have been initiated under Mr. Christie that Mr. Ingram was able to ribbon cut. That's the nature of the thing. So that's just petty to be talking about that stuff in that way, right? If you preside over an economy that's growing in any kind of way, it happens under your legacy. If you trace it back to another administration, that's okay as well. The truth of the matter is, Bahama is not the only reason why the Bahamian economy was growing. It is not, was not. Otherwise, you'd be able to trace every job creation just to that. So it's not just that. It was helpful. It was a part of it, but you can't just say that, all right? You know, it seems to me like sometimes we are scared that if I can give credit to an administration for something, then I can't vote against them. That's nonsense. I can give you credit for something and still believe that other things were not sufficient to cause me to vote for you. But you don't have to discredit a reality just to make a point against somebody that you are not in support of. His text says, "Good afternoon, Mr. Lang. In reference to your last point, I'm not surprised to hear those percentages because
VAT increase and the new hotel opened. However, the growth came with some pain. I would like to see us get free monies from our airspace and other natural resources, not taxes and tourism. Okie dokie. Got you. The fact of the matter is, airspace and natural resources are going to give you some revenue, but the bulk of your revenue is going to come through the taxation of massive economic activity in your country. And it may one day come mostly from taxing income. Right now, the government gets VAT revenue only if you spend. If you don't spend, or you spend less, it will get less. If you spend more, it'll get more. But tax and draining of this and that and the next thing, that's not going to get us where we need to go. What we need to have some solid entrepreneurial undertakings in the country. Existing businesses have to see opportunities for increased economic activity for themselves, and new businesses have to see the possibility of earning revenue by investing. If that doesn't happen, Bahamas is going to have a very hard, long road. Let me say it once again. The Bahamas has to, for the next 5, 10, 15 years, have a solid experience of Bahamian business people, of foreign business people investing and succeeding in their investments in this economy. And most of them will have to be doing so by trading, meaning selling their wares, their products and their services on the international market, earning foreign currency. I would dare anyone to challenge me that that is the case, that for the next 15 years, 5, 10, 15 years, the Bahamas needs a solid experience of Bahamian business people, of foreign business people, establishing, expanding businesses in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, and mostly trading to the rest of the world. Nothing beyond that can catalyze our prosperity. I said catalyze, because after that, how we manage our financial affairs as private individuals and as a country will then determine how much of those gains that we get translate into sustainable, robust living for ourselves. We are going to have Bahamians, or private Bahamians, are going to have a period of serious deleveraging, meaning reducing or rebalancing our indebtedness, both us personally and as a group, and then the country will have to do so. We are going to have to find savings in terms of interest expenses, reductions in our principal, outstanding principals on the loans and mortgages and stuff we have, and over a period of time. And frankly, that will not really happen in any meaningful way for us unless, one, we decide to do it. And then two, over the next 15 years, 10 years, 15 years, we make considerable efforts in doing that. That's the only way that we are going to make this financial ship of ours more steady. And that takes very serious and dogged commitment. We can do it, but it takes dogged commitment, serious dogged commitment to do. So, beginning tomorrow, I am going to be looking at the leadership of these political parties. I'm going to be asking some basic questions about the things that matter to leadership from my own understanding of leadership and leadership of a country in particular. So we're going to begin that process tomorrow. We're going to start it with the current Prime Minister of the Bahamas. Why not? Because he's the current leader of the country. We're going to look at his leadership from what we can observe, not my opinion so much as what we can observe, and then maybe some of my opinion or thoughts on what we have observed. And I'd like to hear yours. And then we're going to do Mr. Davis on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, we're going to look at Mrs. Komolafe, and then we'll go from there and see how that rolls. I can't promise you we'll do everybody, but the ones that we regard as in the offing, in the running somehow. Maybe even Mrs. Komolafe these days, given the polling, might be a push. But we'll see. But we'll look at leadership. And then we're going to look at the parties and their platforms and go from there. So I invite you to stay tuned. We're going to be interviewing some candidates as well as we move forward. So stay tuned. And let's see how she rolls. You've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Nahaja Black is up next. God bless you. And we will talk to you again tomorrow. God spares our lives. We'll be back tomorrow.
Together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, letting you know that you're not alone. Holler if you feel.